Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. It's got great odds and markets for Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, PGA Tour, and so much more. And of course, boxing, which is why you're listening to this. It is awesome with new and existing user promotions. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's safe and secure. You get your winnings fast. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay, and you can discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so that they know that I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
I would like to say that your highest rated guest has returned.
You are not my highest rated guest.
Yes, I am. Admit it. Admit it.
The latest arriving guest is what you are. Latest arriving. On the day of and...
You know, I show up when it matters, Mannix. I show up when it matters.
That's not proven to be true.
Like I teach my son, punctuality matters. It's a sign of respect in other people's time, and I do the exact same thing.
You missed all of Thursday because you flew in late in the day.
That just means I don't respect you. That's all that
okay,
means.
Okay. All right. Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN boxing analyst, is in. We are in San Antonio for the Bam Rodriguez-Sarisa Katsour-Rungvisai fight. That's a fight you can see on Saturday live on DAZN. And we're going to get to that, Sergio. But I want to look back to the fight that I was ringside at last weekend. Artur Beterbiev against Joe Smith, light heavyweight unification fight. And this one looked like it could be a war because Beterbiev, arguably the biggest puncher in all of boxing. Joe Smith, a big puncher with a granite chin. Felt like going in, it could be a back-and-forth fight. Whoever landed first would win. No, not so much. Joe Smith knocks... Artur Beterbiev knocks Joe Smith down in this first round. Knocks him down twice in the second round. Would have knocked him down again had Harvey Dock not stopped that fight. Artur Beterbiev is your unified light heavyweight world champion. What do you think of Beterbiev's performance, and did it surprise you to see him mow down Joe Smith the way he did?
It surprised me, but it just shows you how hard Artur Beterbiev hits. I mean, he has cinder blocks for hands. They're heavy hands. But while you're talking, I'm thinking, and you know what's more important than having a granite fist? Having granite chin.
Okay, it's not granite. It's granite.
Granite. Granite, granite, apple, potato, potato.
No, not. not even close.
So Beterbiev, yeah, he has these heavy hands where he doesn't have to hit you cleanly. Now, Joe Smith has heavy hands as well, but his doesn't come with as much technique as Beterbiev. And if you notice in that first round, Beterbiev came out boxing, moving. I didn't expect that. That kind of threw me off. He was moving laterally, and he wanted to feel out Joe Smith. He wanted to see what kind of game plan he had in that first round. And, you know, he wanted to feel out those hands as well. It was two power punchers that wanted to feel out their power. Beterbiev did the right thing by moving the first round. And Joe Smith, that second round, or was it the first round he got caught? He got caught early, I know
caught
that.
Caught in the first round, went down, and that changed the course
and
of the
fight. And then that changed. So I think Beterbiev did the smart thing, but that's that Olympic pedigree, moving around the ring, getting the feel of the ring, not get hit early by a puncher. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you get hit by someone with hard hands that early. You don't get accustomed to the power, then you can't recoup after that. So Beterbiev showed not only experience, and he showed character, but he showed that he has more than just power. He has, you know, a fight game. And Joe Smith, on the other hand, yeah, man, I didn't expect him to go down like that. I expected a war. I expected 7 or 8 rounds, but that just goes to show you how powerful Beterbiev is and how dangerous he is.
Beterbiev is an underrated boxer. Like, he was a world champion back in 2009. He was an Olympian, lost controversially in the 2008 Olympics. His previous amateur loss was to Alexander Usyk. So he's fought some of the best in the amateur ranks. He's not just, you know, this blunt force trauma type of guy. He has rocks in his hands, but he knows how to deliver those punches. I know Smith's team was angry afterwards about some of the punches behind the head, and Beterbiev does have a history of kind of landing behind the head, but it's because guys duck down, Sergio. And when guys duck down, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them when they get hit behind the head. Like, don't duck into punches like that.
I used to get penalized a lot in the amateurs on national tournaments by dipping down, and I took that into the pro ranks. That's my style. I used to dip below my opponent's waist, and I used to evade punches that way. I had great defense, great upper body movement. But in the amateurs, they want you to just put your hands up and block that way. That's not going to work in the pros. It's a flawed system, but that's another story. Moving your head makes a power puncher miss completely. Anytime you have a hard puncher, he's accustomed to hitting and hurting something. But when you make a miss completely, not only does he tire out quickly, his legs go out quicker, but he gets discouraged and he doesn't want to throw as many punches. So Beterbiev, yeah, he may have caught him at the side of the head, but it was legal. It was definitely legal, and it's because Joe Smith, you know, kind of huddles into that guard and he gives up the side of his head. But every fighter, I don't care how great defensively a fighter is, has been hit borderline side back of the head. Every fighter has faced that. You just got to go through it.
Yeah, I bet on Joe Smith in that fight because he was a 13-1 underdog to win by decision in that fight. 13-1.
I like Joe Smith in that fight as well because of that experience he got from Bevo and the fact that
that's Bevo, true. You did pick Smith to win on his own. That was a bad pick.
It was a bad pick, but so was picking Romero.
Did you take Rolly Romero too?
I took Rolly Romero, even though one judge was on board with me, but yeah, I picked Rolly Romero.
Doesn't matter if you get knocked out. Okay, it doesn't matter what the
hey, he was ahead before he got knocked out.
Yeah, then he would have lost on the other two judges' scorecards, so it wouldn't matter either way. So
that's why. Listen, it's 36 minutes of fighting. You can win 35 and still lose.
So Beterbiev is 18-0, 18 knockouts. His resume is starting to get some meat on it. He's got wins over Alexander Vostik. He's got wins over Marcus Brown and now Joe Smith. So here's a question I have for you, Sergio. Is Archer Beterbiev a pound-for-pound guy at this point? I'm not going to ask you straight up to say yes or no. I'm going to ask you, because my pound-for-pound list is coming out on SI.com later this week.
I could already answer it, no.
So, all right, so no. So I'm going to ask you who if he belongs on the list over the last four guys on my list. So Tyson Fury, does he belong on the list over Tyson Fury?
No.
Okay. Shakur Stevenson?
Maybe.
Really? You'd put over Shakur Stevenson?
Just because of the youth. You know, the unification. I know Shakur Stevens, he
126-pound champion, unified at 130, just beat Oscar Valdez.
Stevenson has everything ahead of him, but who do you take out and who do you put in? That's the only reason I take out this young kid, because he's so talented, so gifted, and he has the world ahead of him. But yes, does he belong in top 11, pound for pound? Well, absolutely.
Yeah,
Shakur's
I think
there.
So let me give you the last two here, or last three, rather. Jermell Charlo.
He's up there with Stevenson.
Jermell Charlo's number 8.
No, I put him 9 or 8, Charlo.
Well, Charlo's 8 in my list. Charlo's there right there. At 9, I've got Josh Taylor.
Josh Taylor is probably 10 on my list.
I think Josh Taylor's being overlooked at this point because he had a lackluster win over Jack Catterall. I think you have to give Josh Taylor credit for blowing through the World Boxing Super Series, beating Regis Progre, beating Jose Ramirez. And even though it was a close fight with Catterall, I mean, that wasn't a robbery. Like, it was... I've seen robberies. That wasn't it. It was a close fight that went his way, and maybe it shouldn't have. Good for him for saying, by the way, he's going to stay at 140 to fight Catterall in a rematch. And number 10, I've got Lomachenko on that list. So
you have to, you know, that's what's tricky about these top 10 lists. Who do you take out? But I agree with you with Lomachenko. I agree with you with everyone else. But Stevenson has not accomplished what Lomachenko has accomplished. And I just think, you know, Josh Taylor became undisputed. You know, one of what, you know, 6-7 undisputed champions. And he beat some of the best fighters, as you mentioned. So I just think, you know, he's ahead of the game right now.
Yeah, I mean,
Shakur is.
Yeah, I took on this month's list, I took Dimitri Bivol off and I put Jermell Charlo on. Because, I give Jermell Charlo credit for his resume. Jermell Charlo is one of the most impressive resumes of the guys
in
the top 10.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't blame you on that one, man.
He just knocked out Brian Castaño.
That's a tough decision to make, but I don't blame you on that one.
You know, I know Devin Haney's going to complain about not being top 10, but you really can't. I mean, he's got four belts, but he beat one guy to get them. You know, I don't think that's top 10 yet, not until he faces some better competition. I left Bivol off. I left Beterbiev off. If Bivol fights Beterbiev, the winner of that fight will get on the list. No question about it. Now, we're not going to get that fight next because Beterbiev is headed for a showdown in the UK against Anthony Yard. I think he blows through Yard. I talked to Yard after the fight. Yard said, Beterbiev's a beast, but I'm a beast too. I don't think that's true. I think Beterbiev is a different animal than Anthony Yard. I think that he wins that fight comfortably. And we're probably going to get Dimitri Bivol against Joshua Buatsi or Zerto Ramirez before the end of the year. So we're not going to get that fight next, but who would you favor right now in a Beterbiev versus Bivol fight?
Back to what you're saying about Yard, a beast doesn't beat a beast. What beats a beast is brains. And Dimitri Bivol has a brains. He has a jab. He keeps that distance, that strategy, and that game plan all the way to the end. I'll favor Dimitri Bivol in that fight because of that, because of all that I just mentioned and the momentum that he has beating the number one fighter in the world in Canelo. So momentum, confidence, style, pedigree, and the fact that he's just so damn smart. You know, you talk to Dimitri Bivol in an interview or in a conversation, and it's enlightening the things that he says. You know, even though it is with a heavy accent, he says the right things, man. He says the right things. Kind of like me with my Latino accent. But, yeah, he's a pleasure to talk to. He's very smart, and he's a hell of a fighter. And power's not going to be enough to beat Dimitri Bivol. You're going to need more than that.
Yeah, you're going to need more than that, but it goes back to what I said a minute ago. Beterbiev's not just some power puncher. He's got skill behind him.
He showed that, yeah.
He does. He's got
good clubbing footwork. Clubbing punches aren't going to land, one, on Bivol because he's not going to break that distance. Joe Smith got caught with that hooking-type punch because he was in that range. You know, Bivol's going to maintain that range like he proved in all his fights with everyone else. I mean, he got rocked with Joe Smith Jr., but Joe Smith Jr. punches really hard.
Yeah, Beterbiev punches
from that.
Harder.
He learned from that, and it was towards the end of the fight.
Yeah,
what was
Joe
it, the 11th
is,
round?
Joe Smith is reckless out there. Beterbiev is
I wouldn't call him reckless.
Joe Smith is unpolished, a wild puncher.
Unpolished, right, but not reckless.
All right, you're splitting hairs there. He's a kind of a wild puncher out there. Beterbiev is not. Beterbiev is a compact
Mayorga
puncher.
Mayorga is a wild puncher. He's not a wild puncher.
All right,
Joe Smith.
But it's different. It's different with Archer Beterbiev in the ring because he's a very accurate puncher. He's a strong puncher. He throws punches from all kinds of angles really concisely. He's dangerous in there against Dimitri Bivol. And I'm not sure, like, Bivol knew that Canelo probably wasn't going to hurt him. Like, Canelo's powerful at 168, not so much at 175. Bivol knew he could do some things. I think the Bivol that fought Canelo would get caught by Archer Beterbiev. And if you get caught by Beterbiev, it's over. Lights out. Joe Smith learned that. Alexander Vostick learned that. Marcus Brown learned that. All these guys that are big, legitimate light heavyweights. Vostick, I keep going back to that win. That was a great win.
It was. Vostick aged well.
Vostick is a tremendous fighter, and he was winning some rounds against Beterbiev, and then he got stopped. Like, I can see the same thing happening to Dimitri Bivol. Unfortunately, we're not going to get it for a while. Maybe not until, I don't know, end of next year.
It's
really.
All right. We're going to get great interim fights in between. I would love to see either one of these guys fight Zurdo Ramirez or Yard or anyone else. These are great fights.
You really want to see Beterbiev against Yard?
You know what? Yard? Yes, I would.
Why?
I mean, it won't be a marketable fight, but it'll be a damn good fight.
You think that's a good
stylistically,
fight?
Stylistically,
you think that's a good fight?
Yes, absolutely. Ramirez against Yard will be a hell of a fight.
I think Ramirez against Bivol.
All
is
these
a
guys
fight.
Are great.
I think
fights.
Ramirez Bivol is a very
stylistically,
good fight.
Stylistically, they match up well.
I don't think Yard can handle the pressure of Beterbiev. I don't see that happening. All right, we are here in San Antonio for Bam Rodriguez against Sarisa Katsua Rungbasai, 115-pound world title fight. Bam, the champion, Sor Rungbasai, the former champion and title challenger. I want to ask you first about Bam Rodriguez's last win. It was just a few months ago that Rodriguez took a fight against Carlos Quadras on less than a week's notice, I should say, and moved up two weight classes and beat one of the better fighters at 115 pounds. What did you think of that performance, first off?
Well, no, you got to give the kid credit. I mean, at 22 years old, going up against a fighter that's fought all of the fearsome four, from Chocolatito to Estrada to Sorongvasa, he fought them all. And for Ben Rodriguez to take that step in a short notice fight is incredible. I mean, no matter how much money they try to pay me to do that, I would never have done it.
That's such bullshit. Of course you would for money.
No, well, maybe for money, but still, it takes a lot for a young undefeated kid like this, and it's for a championship as well. So it says a lot about his character and the belief that the team has in him. But the way he handled it, Mannix, he fought the first half of the fight brilliantly, and then he started exchanging with Sarung Desai. But Robert,
Quadras.
And then Robert Garcia in his corner was telling him, do not exchange with him. It's keep it in twos and fews and keep moving. Keep shifting. Keep the angles. And that's what he's going to have to do with Sarung Desai as well. But for a 22-year-old to carry that game plan all the way to the end is what speaks volumes.
So what did you make then of his decision not only to stay at 115 pounds, but to take on the biggest puncher in the division in Sarung Desai? Bam Rodriguez easily could have dropped back down to 112, where there are some marketable fights out there for him. Theoretically, Julio Cesar Martinez, if he can ever make weight, would be a good fight for Rodriguez. Sonny Edwards is out there potentially for Rodriguez. Instead, Bam decided to stay at 115, keep his title, and he's going up against a guy who, even at 35 years old, is still the biggest puncher in this weight class. It's an opportunity, but it's a really dangerous one. Because
yeah, that's exactly how you become great, Mannix, by taking on these challenges, on names, on champions. These guys look great on your resume, and the reason they're dangerous is because, yes, one punch can change something, but looking back at it, when all said and done, and you look at the names on your resume, that's when you say, man, I can't believe I took on that challenge.
Yeah, it's a huge credit to Bam Rodriguez for doing it, because he could have stayed at 115 and defended his title against a lesser opponent. This is a homecoming fight for Bam Rodriguez. He's San Antonio born, San Antonio raised, still lives in San Antonio, met the mayor of San Antonio this week, so he is getting the full treatment from the city of San Antonio. He could have fought someone lesser, but he's taking on Sorung Vasai, and I'm of the belief, Sergio, that Sorung Vasai has something left. I believe he does, because I look back at that Estrada fight. I watched that a couple of times now. He had a terrible game plan in that fight. He fought orthodox against Estrada, and for like 9 rounds fighting orthodox, he looked ordinary. Then in the 10th round, he switches back to southpaw, and he's landing big shots. He's connecting right with those big shots. And one thing that you brought up about Bam Rodriguez, he does have a tendency to stand in front of his opponents. You mentioned what Robert Garcia was saying. Don't stand in front of him. Don't stand in front of him. It's one thing to stand in front of Carlos Quadras. It's quite another to stand in front of Sarisa Katsuo-Rung Vasai. And if he does that, he's going to open the door to get knocked out. He is a naturally smaller fighter going up against a guy that, if nothing else, still has power left in him.
Mannix, it wasn't my trainer that said this. I confuse him for Oscar Wilde at times. Experience is what men give the name to their mistakes. So if you make mistakes, you're going to say, oh, well, that was experience. No, that every fighter doesn't need that. Sometimes talent is enough to skip that experience factor. Sometimes just being ahead of being gifted. And I see those little qualities in Bam Rodriguez. He's a gifted fighter. He's ahead of the class. And that's the reason he's able to skip these, classes, skip these opponents that he's supposed to face and get to the level, the championship level, but he skipped it.
All right, so who are you taking in this fight, Rodriguez or Sorung Vasai?
Bam Rodriguez by decision. I think he gets rocked. He will get checked. I mean, it's bound to happen, but I think this time he knows how to not exchange, keep the punches in twos and fews, and pot shot, he gets hurt. You know, keep the combinations fluid but early, and later just be comfortable on a comfortable decision.
So you think he can take the power of Sorung Vasai.
I think he could take the power if he doesn't get hit cleanly, if he's not stationary. If he's moving, he can take the power because he can roll with the shots. But if he's actually, you know, in the pocket, flat-footed, exchanging, no way. No, nobody's going to be able to take those punches.
Well, so the other factor in this is that his longtime trainer, Robert Garcia, was only part of half of this camp, the first 4 weeks or so of this camp. The other half, he was over in the UK working with Anthony Joshua. There was some continuity there. Robert's son, Junior, was the basically the head trainer while Robert was gone. He's been part of every camp with Bam Rodriguez. But do you think that's a factor, not having your head trainer around?
No, that all depends on the fighter. I think the fighter, if he's mentally weak, and I know you, I hate to say that because most fighters are not mentally weak, but if they're needy. And I ran a lot across a lot of fighters like this on the Contender. We weren't allowed to use our trainers. And a lot of fighters, they were like babies. I need this. I need my gym. I need my certain type of gloves. I need my trainer. And I saw through that weakness, and that's why I realized I had the upper hand. Some fighters don't need that. I mean, yes, as long as they're there fight night, Mannix, that's all that matters. As long as you have that familiar voice when you need him. And if you had a couple of weeks in camp to go over the things that you already know you have to do, that you're going to be just fine. And Robert Garcia is not one of these top class trainers that's the only one that does this. Freddie Roach had to manage his time to do this. Emmanuel Stewart had to manage his time to do this. Whenever you're the top drawer of training, you're the top dog and you're demanded, you got to go where the money is because that's your career as well. You're not just focused on one fighter. You have a stable of fighters. Eddie Reynoso is another example. You go where the money is. You go where the opportunity is. And that's how you build your name and your legacy and your credentials as a trainer.
Well, this is going to be the biggest test, no question, of Bam Rodriguez's career. And I'm very curious to see how he holds up to the power of Sorung Vasai because he cannot stand in front of this guy.
You are infatuated with power. What is it with you and power? It's like a Napoleonic complex, but with power.
Well,
with you.
I spend a lot of time around you and you never had it. So
I did a lot of things without it because it's not needed. Technique is for speed of
second.
Know
what my
power
thing
is
about
last.
You is, didn't you tell
you
me
are
like,
so infatuated. Dude,
didn't
I'm
you tell
you,
me
something's
as,
wrong with you.
Didn't you tell me as
you're
like
lacking
a,
something.
Didn't you tell me as a younger fighter you fought Southpaw and you had power at that point?
I did.
I had great power.
I had power as a southpaw, but then I turned orthodox and it just went out the window because I had my lead hand in the front. So I had my power hand in the front, but I would get hit a lot more.
If only you'd fought as a southpaw your entire career.
No way, man. I came a long way with no power. I'm
That's true. That's true. I'll always give you that. All right. Let's move to the heavyweight division for a second. Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk were both over in Saudi Arabia for the promotional press tour part of their heavyweight title fight. That is on August 20th. You got a good look at both these guys. You know what's going on in Joshua's world. You know what's been going on in Usyk's world. What are your early thoughts on that rematch?
The early thoughts are the same with everyone else's. The consensus is nothing's going to change. Usyk's going to do the exact same thing and pot shot him from different angles and maybe even stop him this time because he has that experience. He got the timing down. He knows what punches are going to land. Now, Joshua did make some adjustments, and we know that that's what he does. When he lost with Andy Ruiz, he came back with a totally different game plan and was able to win the championship back again.
How much of that, though, was Andy Ruiz being in awful shape taking the rematch seriously?
Listen,
because you know Usyk's not like that.
Listen,
Usyk is totally different.
Everyone can play devil's advocate with any type of fight. I'm just sticking to what I see. The game plan was different, on his toes,
okay,
boxing.
What did you see in Andy Ruiz in that fight?
A big tub of goo, in the words of Jim Lampley. I think that's what Jim Lampley said when introducing somebody. I forgot, but no, yeah. But look, that's how it is. When I fought Vernon Forrest, how much of that was Vernon Forrest making adjustments to the rematch, or me having Andy Ruiz type fun as well?
I'm gonna go a lot of you having Andy Ruiz type fun is what I'm
and
go
you
with.
Will be right, but I'm not gonna blame it.
What was
on
your
that.
Training camp for that, like 6 weeks?
It was 6 weeks, and I lost 28 pounds. But look, that's neither here or there. But what I'm telling you is I don't blame it on that. I'm a man. I man up. I got beat by a great fighter, a legendary fighter, and you know that I won't take the world.
Wasn't there one point when you were like asleep under the bleachers in some way because you were trying to lose all that weight?
Oh, man, it got bad. Trying to make weight bad. I say all the time. Making weight, have to fight one, and if you make it the wrong way, it's going to show and you will lose.
Especially
on the biggest
when you
stage.
Spend most of your time at Caesar's Palace, table number 12.
Hey, listen, now I have stock in Caesar's. I'm doing okay.
All right, so you, well, AJ Usyk, AJ's changes, all the changes gone through, how is it a positive? Is it a negative? How do you see the new voices on his team?
you know, we're going to find out, but I'm going to say
you hate change.
I hate change, and I hate to poop on his changes because I know he's such a smart fighter. He's a strategic fighter. He's a businessman. Joshua is. And I mean, from gold medal to unified heavyweight championship of the world to losing it to regaining it, these are things that only great fighters do. Great champions, heavyweight champions, Ali, three-time champion, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis. Every time they lost the title, they would go back and to the same guy. They wouldn't take an interim fight. They would go back to the same guy and get what was theirs back. And that's what you got to appreciate about Anthony Joshua. He may not have the resume of a great, great fighter just yet, but he's doing great things and he has a great mentality. He's not going to let that go. He wants who beat him, and I want that belt back, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. So you got to appreciate that.
Yeah, but he's bringing in Robert Garcia to be his head trainer. He's working with Angel Fernandez. I don't know what, if at all, Rob McCracken is with this team, but he's going to go into this fight with an entirely new strategy, and he's doing it against a guy who is like the Iceman of boxing. Like, you're not going to phase
Iceman.
Alexander
like
Usyk.
That.
He has been a road warrior every step of the way, going to Latvia, the UK, the US. He's traveling the world taking on big challenges. So going to Saudi Arabia doesn't mean anything to Alexander Usyk. Facing Joshua in a rematch is not going to bother Usyk. Like, he's going into this fight, and I'm expecting, Sergio, like, with Ruiz, you could see the weight gain, and you could say that's probably not going to be the same guy on fight night.
Right.
Usyk, he's going to be the same guy or better on fight night. And that, to me, is Joshua's biggest challenge.
That's why Joshua's going to be a big underdog, and that's why a lot of people in the business are making Usyk the favorite, including myself. I think the exact same thing is going to happen. We're going to see flashes of Joshua and what he learned, but he's not going to be able to carry that the entire time. He'd land a punch or two here, but Usyk make the adjustments. That's what he's so brilliant at doing. If he gets hit on one side, he's going to move for you won't hit him on that one side again. Lomachenko does the exact same thing. They do lateral movement so brilliantly, and they confuse fighters. I call them boxing ballerinas. I mean, because that's what they look like. If you just forget the upper half of their body, just look at their lower half, they look like ballerinas. They're beautiful, fluid movement, and Usyk has that as well from that left-handed stance, and he just pot shots you from angles you don't expect coming. Yeah, I think it's going to be the exact same thing. We will see flashes of the Joshua. If he can rock Usyk, then things will change. If we can see Usyk flustered by the aggression, we can see change, but I just don't see it happening.
Is what happens to Joshua's career if he loses?
Joshua's always going to have big fights. I mean, he can fill out a stadium. I mean, he's a superstar in the UK. I think if he loses it, and depending on how he loses, by the way, lose the decision, which is most probably what's going to happen. But if he loses a decision, he can go and fight one of these youngsters, Joe Joyce. You know, that would be a big fight. Or Triple D, Dubois. That would be a big fight. I mean, there's a lot of big fights from across the pond.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd have to rebuild his confidence, though. It would be probably a year to get him back to the world level once again. You'd probably have to fight him two or three times before you fight him.
No, guys like that don't lose their confidence, man. They're champions, man.
You think you lose two in a row? You don't lose your confidence?
Yeah, but you lost two in a row.
Lose your titles? You don't lose your confidence?
You lost two in a row to champions, and you just realized maybe this is...
Did you lose your confidence after losing your title?
No, because I was 28. You know, Josh was a little older now.
About 30, 31, whatever.
Yeah, so maybe it's time for him to start thinking about the second chapter of his life.
What was the weirdest weight? How did you lose that weight? How did you lose 28 pounds in 6 weeks?
A lot of work, not a lot of eating, and a lot of saunas. It was disgusting, man. I don't wish it on my worst enemy. Speaking of which, you need to lose weight.
Gee, thanks. Want that. All right, so let's move on to a couple of things real quick. Katie Taylor. I reported this week that Katie Taylor is likely to face Chris Cyborg in a fight, in a boxing match before the end of the year. Cyborg, of course,
is... I love that.
It's interesting. I think it'll have some mainstream appeal. But Cyborg is a mixed martial artist. Katie Taylor is a boxer. Why do you love Taylor versus Cyborg?
Because Katie Taylor has given so much to boxing that she needs that big payday, that easy payday, that Jake Paul-type payday. She's given everything as an amateur, won a gold medal for her country. She's given everything as a professional, became undisputed. Her last handful of fights have been physical ones, you know, fights that you're not used to seeing her get hit like that. She's a boxing lifer, and she demands She demands that type of money now, and I hope that she gets paid with that crossover money, that Mayweather, Conor McGregor money. And I think Chris Cyborg brings that. Cyborg's a legend in MMA, but in boxing, any MMA artist that comes into boxing is going to get beat up because they're not focused 100% on one art, on one style of fighting. That's stand-up. That's boxing, just using your hands. They're wrestling and choking and breaking thumbs and knees and all that. That doesn't work when you're just the sweet science. So I just think it's going to be an easy night for Katie Taylor. It's going to be a major promotion because we've seen how she gets pushed now by her promotional company on the biggest stages, on the biggest venues, and it's going to do big numbers. So I love that fight.
Yeah, look, I think it's a fight they're trying to put in Las Vegas. I think it is a relatively easy fight for Katie Taylor. Our good friend Bob Torrens, the producer of the DAZN Boxing
the
Show, he is convinced that Chris Cyborg will put up a fight against Taylor. And that's what you want, right? Like, you want the MMA fans to believe that their fighter can win, even though, Sergio, there is a 0.000% chance that Chris Cyborg beats Katie Taylor. It just doesn't happen. That's not a critique of Chris Cyborg. It's just a fact that MMA fighters cannot beat boxers. And Chris Cyborg, arguably the greatest female MMA fighter of all time, cannot beat Katie Taylor, arguably the greatest women's boxer of all time. It's just not going to happen. So I think it's great that Cyborg fans are buying all the way in and thinking that their fighter can win. It's going to make the promotion do well. It's going to make the fight do well. But ultimately, it's going to be an easy payday for Katie Taylor. And she deserves it because she has had tough fight after tough fight over the last few years.
Hey, shout out to Bob Torrens, the greatest producer and editor and DAZN has. So shout out Bob Torrens. Anyway, P.T. Barnum, man, Maddox, the greatest promoter in promoter history. P.T. Barnum would say a sucker was born every minute. If you promote it well, they will come. If you sell it well, they will come. He said it's something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But if you sell this fight the right way with the mixed martial artists, they're going to buy. They're going to buy into it, just like they did with Conor McGregor, and that's how they're doing it with all these other YouTube fighters. I thought it was a fad, but it's not a fad. This is where we are now. This is where we are, and it will sell. Katie Taylor already has her boxing fan base. That's not going anywhere. That's international. And Chris Cyborg, she's been around for, you know, decades now, it seems like. And she's a legend in mixed martial arts. I watch her fights. I love watching her fight. She's a beast. So I just think she brings her toughness. She brings her experience. But yeah, she's going to get beat, but she's going to get a big check with it, and she deserves it. Both fighters do.
But she's not a boxer, and she won't win. So.
But listen, it's going to be a circus. It's going to be a circus that's going to sell and do numbers, and that's all that matters. Moolah.
And look, with Amanda Serrano fighting in August, if Katie Taylor fights in December, they would love – Katie Taylor's side has told me they would love to make Taylor versus Serrano 2 in Ireland in May of 2023. That's a huge event. And there is confidence on the side of Taylor that the Ireland door is open, that in the aftermath of everything that's happened with Daniel Kinahan and the dissolvement of MTK, there is more confidence than ever that a Taylor fight in Ireland can be made. Taylor has never fought professionally in Ireland. And I know Taylor's team is just salivating at the possibility of making Taylor versus Serrano 2 in Ireland. And I think that's a huge deal. So let Katie Taylor get a win. Let her move forward. Let Serrano get her confidence back in August. Maybe she fights one more time before the end of the year at 126, or maybe she moves back up to 135, and we get Taylor versus Serrano 2, which is the fight everybody wants to see anyway. So I'm all for that. I'm sure you are as well.
Whether it's here or in Ireland, I think that fight does big numbers. I would love for it to do it in her home soil. She deserves all that. Katie Taylor deserves all that. I know I keep saying that word, but boxers need to fight for what they get. They bleed for it. They earn it and still don't get it at the end sometimes, and it's a sad story. So sometimes whenever I see fighters like this hitting to their mid-30s, they're coming off the biggest fights of their life and still being there, but already showing signs of getting hit, of being old and already exiting their prime. I just want them to get paid, make a lot of money and go off into the sunset, because I know what it's like to go off into the sunset broke, because I've seen it. No, not me, but I've seen it too many times.
You just said, I know what it's like.
Yeah, because I've seen it too many times. I've seen too many kids with much more talent than I did, you know, just be broke or be stuttering their words or,
you,
or have
you've
nothing.
You've talked about this. You were broke at one point, like post-contender, post-Forest. You were broke at one point.
Well, not broke, but I wasn't making the exact same money. So I went from, you know, high six figures to making, you know, $50,000 a fight. Yeah, yeah. So that I had to get back to that those six-figure fights. But no, I'm talking about broke, man. I'm talking about where you can't even get a fight, or if you do get a fight, you're going to get overmatched for $5,000. That's the truth.
Yeah.
$5,000 for an overmatched fight. That's what $7,000 fights to get back to the big fights. That's what I call broke, you know? So Katie Taylor, I would never want her to see her going backwards like that.
Oh,
I
she's never going
to, I want her to cash she's- out. And look back at her career as the greatest female fighter ever.
She is. And she's never going to go broke because she is the greatest athlete in Irish sports history, arguably at least. And I think she beats Cyborg. And then we'll see what happens against Serrano later in the year if they can put that fight ultimately together. Last thing for you. Mentioning Amanda Serrano back August 6th on the undercard of Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury. If Jake Paul beats Tommy Fury, will you finally give Jake Paul some credit?
Speaking of clowns and P.T. Barnum and circus ringleaders, you won't let it go.
Why?
You would not. You're not going to let this die. You're not going to let
people Jake in boxing Paul, are willing to let it die.
Yeah, I know, because they're part of the same charade. And if Jake Paul fights Tyson Fury, is he going to be fighting a professional
Tommy
fighter?
Tommy Fury. You keep saying Tyson. Tommy Fury.
See, I don't. His name is irrelevant to me, even though he's popular. But I don't know him. I don't know Jake Paul and Logan Paul up until this point either, but they're obviously, you know, stars in their own right. Yeah, you got to give him credit for fighting a professional fighter, but Tyson Fury, if you look at his record.
Tommy Fury. For the love of God.
Tommy Fury. Tommy boy. If you look at his record, it's embarrassing, man. It's embarrassing. They're professional fighters. They got professional license, so we got to give them their credit. Yes, they're professional fighters. Any man that steps into that ring, you got to give all the credit to. So, yes, at least Jake Paul's going in the right direction. But as a former champion, I look at it and still scoff.
Well, you have to give him credit, though, for fighting a real fighter. You've been saying, and others have been saying, when is Jake Paul going to fight a real fighter? Tommy Fury is a professional fighter. It's what he does. And he's got an undefeated record at this point. So if Jake Paul beats Tommy Fury, he will have done what people like you and others said he wouldn't do, right? Like, he's fighting a real fighter. Like, what do you want him to do? Like, what is a real fighter to you? Like, who should Jake Paul face to give himself some credibility?
No, look, I'm not going to...
Chavez Jr.? Would that give him credibility?
I'm not totally going to just criticize him. He's going in the right direction. Give him credit for that. He is fighting a professional fighter. But if you want to nitpick, Tommy Fury is not the one that you should go for, but it's a smart business deal. Tommy Fury is popular. He's a good-looking kid. He's undefeated, and he's technically, quote-unquote, a professional fighter.
He is a professional fighter. And Jake Paul, if he beats him, I'd love to see him face Chavez Jr. or Anderson Silva, for that matter, who picked up a win over Chavez Jr. One of those two would be fine by me. There still are opponents out there for him.
Chavez Jr., another guy that's been getting paid millions of dollars for embarrassing the sport and continues getting opportunities.
How much for you to fight Jake Paul at 175?
At 175, I will do it for an even $999,999 with 99 cents. Come on, Jake. Let's go.
When we come back, my conversation with Jesse Rodriguez. Fight fans, come out swinging with a no-sweat first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers get up to $1,000 back in free bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. Bet on who will win, knockouts, when the fight will end, and so much more. So if you haven't tried FanDuel, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. Join now with the promo code BOXING to get a no-sweat first bet. That's up to $1,000 back in free bets if your first bet doesn't win, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, Jesse, Bam Rodriguez is here. On Saturday, he will defend his WBC 115-pound championship against Srisakat Sorungvisai. Jesse, of course, fresh off the biggest win of his career, decision over Carlos Quadras. Is that right, Jesse? Biggest win of your career, would you call that win?
Of course, that was definitely the biggest win in my career. I had never faced an opponent like Carlos Quadras, a former world champion, so a victory over him is definitely the biggest accomplishment in my career so far.
San Antonio's favorite son is how Kevin Rooney of Matchroom described you. Is that sound about right?
It'll come one day for sure. I don't know about right now, but one day I will be caught that.
What was it like growing up in San Antonio as someone that wanted to get into boxing? What kind of boxing climate was it here?
Before I got into boxing, I had no interest in it. I wouldn't watch it, wouldn't think about it. I never cared about it. So I was never in the boxing scene, but it didn't start until one day my brother went to the gym. And being a little brother, you want to be just like your big brother. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to the gym and see what it's about. It took about 2 weeks before I actually started myself. And after that, I fell in love with it. It was something different, and it's boxing is a sport that you have to put your all into, and that's something I admire about the sport, and that's why I stuck with it.
Your brother, of course, Joshua Franco, contender, title holder, his own right. And we were talking about this before we started. He's likely going to face Juan Francisco Estrada at some point at 115 pounds, so could be brothers in the same weight division. Did you guys talk about that possibility when you were growing up, fighting in the same weight class?
Coming up, the talk was being a world champion at the same time. And I didn't expect to be in the same weight class as my brother. I got the opportunity, and I couldn't pass it up. So I took it, I seized it, and I stepped up to the plate. And, I mean, it's just how it worked out.
Your brother, if he beats Estrada, presumably he would rise pretty high in the WBC rankings, maybe even be the number one contender. What happens if he's number one contender for your belt at 115?
I'll vacate. I'll never fight my brother.
I don't know. I wouldn't even ask that, because I don't know why anybody – people ask the Charlos that all the time, and it's ridiculous. Why would two brothers, like, slug it out to try to, you know, in a sport as dangerous as boxing? The Klitschko's once told me – I think Vladimir was one that told me this, that, like, when he and his brother sparred as kids, like, he broke his leg once sparring. It was so vicious. I'm sure you sparred your brother when you were younger, and even – now was the last time you did spar your brother?
I sparred him back in December, but it wasn't, like, no full sparring. No, it was just more working with each other, giving each other tips and fixing our mistakes.
So you'd vacate first. Wouldn't you tell your brother, like, hey man, it's my belt, why don't you go, there's three other sanctioning bodies around that, like, why don't you go do
I mean, my brother has the skills to be anybody in this weight class, and it's just a matter of time before he gets his opportunity. So those belts, they're not safe with whoever has it. It's just mine.
Exactly. For people that don't know the backstory on this, you go by Jesse Rodriguez, your brother Joshua Franco. Why the different last names?
I got my father's last name. Josh got my mother's last name, and that's because when Josh was born, my parents they weren't getting along together. So my mom's parents, they didn't really like my dad, so they made them split up. And my mom, I think she ended up moving up to Dallas or something like that. So whenever my brother was born, that's why he has my mom's last name, because my parents were really on good terms at the time. So then whenever I was born, everything was flowing well with my parents, so I got my dad's last name.
You got the total familial last name your brother got.
Same parents, though.
Of course. And the other one that people like, you have one of the better nicknames, I think, in boxing. Just a boxing nickname, Bam Rodriguez.
Simple.
Like, where does that come from?
Well, I've had this name since I was a little kid. It started as Bambino, like from the baseball player.
Okay, Babe Ruth. All right.
Yeah. And then they changed it to Bambi, like the deer. And then eventually I just outgrew that and it became Bam.
Yeah. Bambi, not so much a good boxing nickname. Bam, for sure. Bambino, I can even work with. Take me back to the Quadras fight, because you collapsed in the ring right after that decision was announced. You could see the emotion on your face there. What did that moment mean to you?
That moment meant everything. Before that fight, I had a world title shot. It was scheduled on the Mikey Garcia versus Sander Martin card, and that fell through. So it really hurt, and it was discouraging at that point. So when I got the opportunity to fight Carlos Cuadras, everything happened for a reason. And when after the fight, I already had knew it was in my favor, in my decision. So when I officially heard it, that's when I really, really felt the happiness and all the sacrifices, everything, all 12 years of boxing, that all the hard work, everything I put into the sport, it finally paid off, and it just felt so good, and that's why I collapsed. Like, I couldn't believe it.
You were preparing to be on that card originally, but took that fight on what, around a week's notice?
6 days.
6 days, yeah. To face Quadras. When you got in the ring and moved up in weight for that kind of fight, could you feel that you were in with a bigger, better fighter in that fight?
I wouldn't say a better fighter, but he was definitely stronger than my past opponents, you know, given the fact that I was moving up to 115. It was my first fight in that weight class, so I did feel Carlos Cuadras a little stronger than my past fights. But, you know, I never really showed that on my face. I kept it to myself. I didn't even tell my team. I told him he was a little strong, but, you know, it wasn't anything I couldn't handle.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to adjust to that power? Did you have to adjust to the strength of an opponent that size?
Yeah, I mean, maybe like the first three rounds, it was something different being in there with a former world champion. But after that, I was locked in the whole time, and I never really paid attention. But after the fight is when I really felt it. I was sore for a few days. Yeah,
a few days.
Yeah,
is that after you beat Quadras, you could have moved back down. Your plan was to fight at 112 before that fight. You have said this week you didn't plan on staying at 115. What made you decide to stay at this weight class?
Oh, well, once I got the belt, I was like, you know what? Maybe I do want to defend this at least one time. So I spoke with Robert and my father and everybody on my team, and, you know, it was a full agreement of, you know, maybe defending it once or twice, and that's why we're here.
You said you are defending it one time. You're doing it against probably the strongest guy at 115, I would say, still. Even at 35 years old, Tricicatso Rungvisai can pop. I was going back and watching his fight against Estrada, and he lost that fight pretty clearly.
Yeah.
But in like the 10th and 11th rounds, Estrada stood in front of him, and he got whacked around a little bit in that fight. Take me through kind of how this fight came about and why you decided to accept a fight with Sor Rungvisai.
The reason I accepted this fight was because I'm the fighter that replaced Rungvisai. Originally, he was supposed to fight Carlos Gualaz that night, but he got sick. So that's when I stepped in, and I'm the one that took the title opportunity, and now I have the belt. So I feel like he's the one fighter that does deserve the shot. And like I said in my interview yesterday, I want to be a special fighter. I don't want to be no average fighter. Any other champion would have taken on an easy task, especially in their hometown. But I don't want to just be another fighter. I want to be a legend when it's all said and done. So that's why I'm taking on these challenges.
How different has the preparation for this fight been for Sor Rungvisai as opposed to a guy like Quadras, who is strong but maybe a little more slippery than Rungvisai is?
I feel like Rungvisai is a lot more flat-footed, so we've been working a lot on keeping the mid-distance, working half-distance, and during the Gualaz fight, I was in the pocket a little too much, and I'm not going to be able to do that against Rungvisai.
I could hear Robert Garcia in between rounds of that fight. Don't stand in front of him. Don't stand in front of him over and over
but
again.
But it's just something inside me that wants to fight. But, you know, I became a lot smarter since that fight, and I know that Rungvisai carries power through all 12 rounds, and I can't slip up. I have to be on my A game the whole time, and that's what we work for in the gym for 2 months.
Have you watched – I mean, I'm sure in preparation you've watched some Rungvisai, but, I mean, he was part of some iconic fights over the years, whether it was against Estrada a couple of times. He demystified Chuck Liddito in his fight where he knocked him out. Like, what do you remember about watching him kind of growing up?
Coming up, it was I remember, like, damn, that dude hits hard as shit. Like, I'm not going to lie. When I saw what he did to Chuck Liddito, it shocked the world. And, I mean, I never imagined myself being in the ring with him, but here I am, and I'm more than ready. I'm more than happy, and to do it in front of my city of San Antonio, it makes it that much better and much more exciting.
You came up, obviously, watching those guys, Sor Rungvisai, Chuck Liddito, Estrada, guys that are still fighting right now. You have the win over Quadras. You're fighting Sor Rungvisai. Is it in your mind, like, you know, I have an opportunity, maybe, if I'm successful, to beat all those guys from that era, all the guys I grew up kind of watching and everybody was watching when they were fighting on HBO and they were making this division kind of cool for a while? Like, is it in your mind, like, maybe I can fight them all and maybe beat them all?
Yeah, of course. That makes training that much more motivating because, like you said, there was four kings at the time: Carlos Gualdas, Rungvisai, Chuck Liddito, and Estrada. And I already got through Gualdas, so there's only three kings left. And, you know, I'm taking another one on Saturday night. And to get a win over Rungvisai is just it'll be everything.
For a fighter in the smaller weight classes like yourself, like, how important was the visibility that those four guys got for at 115 pounds? Because I don't think a lot of people are paying much attention to that weight classes before those Superfly cards popped on HBO. Even Chuck Liddito Estrada 1 was, I don't even know if it was televised. If it was, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, those HBO shows really put that division on the map, didn't they?
Yeah, of course. Back then, I'm not sure what year it was, but, you know, they had the Superfly tournaments, the Superfly cars, and that I feel like that brought a lot of attention to the smaller weight divisions, and it's just gonna keep getting better and better, especially with fighters like me, myself, and my brother. There's a lot more fighters at 115, 112, and any of those fights being made between those weight classes just can't miss.
You are trained by Robert Garcia. He is here in San Antonio for this fight, but he's also been splitting time between your camp and training Anthony Joshua. How involved has he been with your camp, and what impact has that had, if any, on your training?
I got to camp 2 months before this fight, and we had Robert there for about 3 or 4 weeks, and you know, he really set the game plan before he left. So when he did leave, it was no problem working with Junior and Chepe, my other two trainers. They're very experienced as well, and I've been working with them since I was 15, so the chemistry has been there since I was a little kid. And I mean, we're ready. We worked on the game plan that Robert left us, and once Robert's in the corner, I'm going to be the fighter that he expected. Mm-hmm.
Should we expect to see a different type of fight than what we saw against Quadras? It kind of goes back to the question about game plan, but again, they are different fighters. Should we expect to see a different Bam Rodriguez in this fight?
I believe so. During the Quadras fight, I was a little more, I wanted to stay in the pocket and brawl, or you know, really, really make my mark and pick up that title. But I had to be a lot more smarter with Rungvisai. So, you know, we've been working on that game plan, and we're ready to go out there and execute it.
Is there going to be a part of you tempted to bang with him a little bit to see what he's got in there, to see what this heavy-handed guy has got at 115?
Well, I already know he's heavy-handed, so, I mean, I don't have to go and test it out. I'm going to be smart the whole 12 rounds. That's what we worked on. And, you know, Robert would get after me if I did something like that. So I don't want to piss Robert off.
He'll get after you. We'll be able to hear it in the broadcast the entire time.
Sure.
he's not shy nor quiet in that corner. You've got a lot to accomplish at 115. You just got to 115. But you're only, what, 22 years old at this point?
Yeah.
Like, you're still growing into your body. As you look at your future, like, how big do you think you can get? How high in weight do you think you can go?
Eventually, I think at the end of my career, probably 126 or 130.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, that high?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's... You look around those divisions, like they've become the cool divisions now. You look at Inoue Donaire with such a massive fight at 118. Stephen Fulton may be against the winner of Akhmadaliyev, Ronnie Rios.
Yeah.
That's a big fight. I mean, do you look around at these other divisions and say this could be cool down the line?
Yeah, of course. You know, there's a lot of big fights to be made down the line, and to be a part of it would just be the cherry on top of my career. You know, I'll be on my way out at that point. So a big fight and just, you know, retire after that would just be amazing.
You got a long way to go before you're on your way out.
Yeah.
I heard you sparred some with Ronnie Rios for this fight. How what do you think his chances are against Akhmadaliyev?
Ronnie's looking sharper than ever. You know, I sparred him before these camps, and he wasn't really doing as well as he was for this camp. So he's really ready, and it's going to be an explosive fight, and it's going to be a fight that you don't want to miss. Mm-hmm. And I believe Ronnie, he has what it takes to pull it out. So I'm rooting for Rios.
The last thing for you is, what's it going to mean for you to kind of be introduced in your hometown as a world champion in front of that crowd, headlining an event against a potential future Hall of Famer like Sor Rungvisai? What is that moment going to mean for you?
It's going to mean everything. It's been 3 years since I fought here in my hometown. And, you know, my name, it didn't really have much as it does now. So being a world champion, defending it for the first time here in the city of San Antonio, is just going to feel amazing, and the crowd is going to be more motivation to pick up a win Saturday night.
How different is fighting this time around as a champion than it was 3 years ago? Are you hearing from more people? Is there, like, the ticket request jacking up?
Yeah, I mean, social media has been crazy. All my phone's been blowing up this whole week, but, I mean, it comes with being a world champion. That'll be for any fight, really, but 3 years ago, I was just about 5-0, 6-0, but now I'm 15-0, and I have a world title, so I have a lot more popularity in the city, and it's just gonna be an amazing night. It's gonna be something special.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great event, Jesse. Good luck to you, man. Looking forward to seeing you back in action. Congrats, and good for you for taking on a tough challenge, man.
Yeah.
I like this about, you know, boxers now. Like, George Kambosos just did it. Like, he, you know, took on a tough challenge after winning all his titles. Here you are, you win that green belt, and you're going right into the ring against a banger and a real tough guy. So good for you for doing that, man.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. All right. Not my best week last week. I went with the upset, and I got burned. I gave you Joe Smith to win by decision, and I mostly gave it to you because I thought the odds were astronomically bad. Joe Smith to win by decision was 13-1. Like, you almost have to put money on that, don't you? Like, you can't let a line like that go by. Turns out, I was wrong. Artur Beterbiev's great. Joe Smith couldn't withstand the power. Beterbiev wins by knockout. Hope everyone didn't lose too much money. This week, I'm going to give you another upset. And I'm more confident in this upset than I was last week. Srisakat Sor Rungvisai, who is taking on Jesse Rodriguez for the 115-pound title, a title that Sarung Visai owned just, I think, 3 years ago. He is plus 400 right now to win this fight. He's older. He's 35. Jesse Rodriguez is 22. He did not look great in his last marquee fight, which was against Juan Francisco Estrada. Lost that by sound decision. And he's only had three relatively low-level wins since then. But I think this is a turn-back-the-clock moment for Sarung Visai because he is the established 115-pounder. He has been at this weight class for a long time, whereas Jesse Rodriguez made his debut at 115 pounds. There's been some inconsistency, I want to say, in Jesse's camp with his longtime trainer, Robert Garcia, not being around for half the camp. I think this is a fight where Jesse is vulnerable. So I am taking Sarung Visai to win at plus 400. The method of victory, that gets even better. Sarung Visai is not going to outbox Jesse Rodriguez, but he can knock him out. And Sarung Visai by knockout is plus 700 over at FanDuel. So I think Sarung Visai wins. Take that at plus 400. I think Sarung Visai wins by knockout. Take that at plus 700. This is the week where I get the money back. Everyone that bet on Joe Smith, I'm sorry. I took a chance. I thought Smith might box a little bit more. He came out, tried to go for a knockout himself, got stopped. Sarung Visai, even in the early rounds, I think he's going to lose some of these early rounds. He is going to pick up a late knockout. That is my prediction. Could be wrong. Jesse Rodriguez, excellent fighter, might outbox him, but he's a smaller fighter. And Sarung Visai, even at 35, still has real pop left in his punches. So those are my picks this week, brought to you by FanDuel.